reset. When the sunrise comes falling, when the midnight comes calling.
Yo, what's good, everybody? It's your host, James Meeks, and we're back for another episode of your favorite Black Fatherhood podcast.
Yes, sir. And what's good, everybody? It's your co-host, Jesse Alex, also the co-founder of Dear Fathers, the premier media platform for Black Fatherhood. Thanks for tapping in.
Before we get into this dope conversation today, I need y'all to go and subscribe and follow us anywhere you get your podcast today. Jesse, let's dive right in, bro. All right, let's do it. Yo, yo, welcome back to another impactful episode of the Dear Fathers podcast. I'm your host, James Meeks. But before we get into it with today's guest, who we're really excited about, I got to check in on my boy. Jesse, how you feeling today, family?
Man, I'm good. This is always one of my favorite times of the year, NBA playoffs. It's a little different than normal years, but I'm excited to watch some basketball in the coming months. See who's going to pull out the championship. Other than that, man, I'm excited about this convo we're about to have today. Amazing father, doing amazing things in his career. So let's get to it.
Definitely excited about the playoffs and this convo, bro. I've been waiting on this one for a long time. So we'd like to welcome an amazing comedian, actor, and director, Kev, on stage to the Dear Fathers podcast. Kev, how you doing today, fam?
Yo, I'm doing great, man. My third podcast shoot today, but by the grace of God, a nap found me right in my moment of need. And I got just enough of sleeping. It's one of those I wasn't even prepared to have it. It was like, hey, man, I had sat down too quick. And next thing I know, I was waking up, you know, so I'm glad to chat with y'all fellas. I love what you know, what you're doing, what you stand for. And it's a super important platform for Black men and Black kids.
Absolutely, man. And, you know, we have share those same sentiments about you. I think to see a Black man come up, grind his way out the way you've done and to build this platform and, you know, to be a positive Black man while you're doing it, man, and inspiring others, man. So just hats off to you and everything that you've done. And we just, you know, hoping to get to know you more today and have our audience kind of step into your world and learn more about your background.
Absolutely, man. I'm here to do it.
Definitely, man. So let's get into it. We usually like to start, you know, everybody can see you on Instagram and, you know, they see you, they see the family, they see everything that you got going on, but we want to take it back. We want to talk about your upbringing, where you from, what was your family life like, and what was your relationship with your father in particular?
So I'm a military brat. I was born in El Paso, Texas. My mom and dad got together when I was 7. My birth father was not in the picture. The person who was my stepfather, you know, I have very few memories that he's not included in. So I'm grateful, super grateful, because he taught me so much about, you know, being a father and being a husband and being a man without ever saying this is how you do it. You know, just watching him do it was great. So I feel like in some ways the combination of not having my birth father in a part of my life, but having somebody assume that position, I feel like that those two made me a better father. I feel like it hit a little different knowing somebody wasn't a part of my life, but somebody was like, nah, but I got you though. You know what I mean? Like if he was my birth father, I'd be like, man, I got a good dad. But I was like, man, I have an even better dad. Cause I could have been out here with no dad. I was out here with no dad. But you know, because of, you know, his choices and my mom's choices, that I have a good father. I feel like I had a great family life even before he was around, very close with my mom, grandma, brother, sister. You know, we was 9 deep in a 3-bedroom house with a dog. And I'm like, in retrospect, the dog, bro, there really no room for him. You know, like we had enough mouths to feed. We was like, nah, but you too. Like, why he even in here? Like, I like dogs, but bro, Sunshine, there's enough going on. There's enough hungry mouths in here. You know what I'm saying? We really shouldn't have added the extra. But my childhood is filled with mostly happiness, joy, church, you know, traveling, although mostly to church and church events. You know, my grandma always made a point to take us to other places, took us to Vegas, you know, took us here and there. And my dad, when we would get orders to different places, we would always take like a 2-week road trip. So we moved from El Paso to Virginia. We stopped and, you know, visited an HBCU. We visited Grambling. He didn't tell me the significance of an HBCU. I wish he would have just taken that other extra step. But I was a kid. I don't know how much it would have sank in anyway. You know, went to Atlanta for the first time and seeing that many Black people, I was like, because in El Paso, it's 95% Hispanic. You know, so to go from that and like, you know, either Hispanic everywhere except for church, and then go to Atlanta where the doggone pilot's black, everybody's black everywhere, was kind of like, oh, we black everywhere here, you know, spend some time there just on that trip. And we kind of always did that. We didn't have a lot of money, but he always made a point to like, here's a little thing. Like he took us to Martin Luther King Memorial, or he took us to like Creflo Dollar's church, which was like, dang, this is big. You know, we stopped by T.D. Jakes' church. Like that's how churchy we are. On our vacation, we stopped by and saw how many people's churches were, you know? So, but even my dad taking us those places, like I want to make, you know, that's something that I've instilled my dad and grandma in my kids, and I travel with them, but you know, because I have more resources, their trips are farther, you know, and they can see things that my parents couldn't afford to take us. So like Japan, last Christmas before the pandemic, I took them to Japan, and it was just such a, like to see them be like, man, this is like on the other side of the world. The culture is very different. The people are very different. The architecture is very different. You know, that stuff I hope will stick with them, you know, and they see that there's more world than their neighborhood or their state or even their country. So, yeah.
That's amazing, man. Go ahead, Jesse.
Yeah, no, I was just going to say, man, that's dope, man. And even, you know, we like to call it, you know, not necessarily a stepfather, a father who kind of just stepped up. And that's super dope that you had that experience, you know, growing up and got to see those things and kind of saw the values that he laid and that you had great memories growing up as a family. And I saw a story about, you know, kind of you growing up being funny and how you had to stay funny just in order to like stay in the living room to watch the shows with the grown folks and everything like that, which had me laughing, you know, and that goes back to, you know, kind of how you were just already that way, the way that you are now. So when did you like really know like entertainment was truly your calling? Like, was it at a point in time in your earlier years or like what age was that you really knew like this is my thing?
Don't laugh, but I wanted to go to the NBA and I thought I was on my way. You know, I was in the AAU team when I was, you know, when we moved to North Carolina, hooping, big hooping. But then I just didn't grow enough to play like a big man. Like I played like I was 6'10". And then I stopped growing at 6'1", 6'2". And I didn't really have the guard skill set nor the shooting. So I remember I didn't know entertainment was my path then, but I was trying out for like a Division IIIA college for like some sort of like, you know, not even scholarship, just like you could go to school but also play on this team. When I tell you I was out there getting cooked, I mean, I was out there, these are white kids, white boy, the big dude. I was like, let me start in the paint, you know, bang with these big boys, man. This white dude dunked on me. I mean, he just was dunking, tip back dunk, post me up, spin, hook me, dunk. Like, I bet I guard 1 through 5. Let me guard the point guard. Another white boy cooked me. I'm talking about this boy was Kyrie Jr. He was Kyle Irving. And he was, I mean, just cooking me. And I went and sat down, took my shoes off, and I was like, yeah, man, that's about it for me, I see. Like, that's going to be the end of this year.
Let me find something else to do.
Yeah, let me find something else to do. So through it, at the same time in college, I was messing around with stand-up, but I didn't see it as a viable, like, you know, career. I just, you know, liked making people laugh. We were doing plays, and I thought that was my out. You know, we were doing plays in college at church and at my college. My brother and I, we won a play competition in the University of Washington, produced our play. So I was like, you know, and we sold out, you know, $5 a ticket, but I don't care. We sold out 180, you know what I'm saying, on like 4 or 5 nights. You feel me? So we were like, your boy out of here. So again, until I reach the end of the road, it's viable. So we were in the play world. And I remember we had flown out a Tyler Perry promoter. And in retrospect, I don't think the person had any connection to Tyler Perry. I think he might've just promoted a Tyler Perry play when it was in that city, but that was good enough for us. And we flew him out and he actually liked the play. The play was great. And he was like, man, y'all really got it. Y'all can make it. Y'all need to put it up in Oakland, because that's kind of where they test out black plays, because there's a huge audience for it in Oakland. Well, because we're in Seattle, they were like, that's the closest place to y'all to where you could really put it up and see if it's viable. And he was like, all y'all need is $330,000 or $300,000. And we were like, I mean, that might as well be $300 million. Like, it doesn't even matter. There's no, I had like $300 in my savings account. Like, literally, like, that's an unreasonable thing. So that's kind of when we realized that wasn't going to work. When I was getting ready to quit, we were all kind of getting ready to quit. And just like, we were coaching our son's basketball team, and they was hooping. We was undefeated. And they were like four, but we was pressing and stuff. It was like, the parents are like, bro, we ain't really trying to do all that. Like, but we are. We run at a 2-2-1 press, and the hoop is this big, and ain't nobody, we was blowing kids out. And we were like, look, man, if we're not going to make it, you know, let's just quit and then coach these kids up and, you know, just be fathers. Like, and that was cool. Like, I wasn't going to be happy about it, but I wasn't going to be sad either. I had my family, my kids, I'd be cool. But before that, I was like, yo, there's these videos going viral on YouTube, stuff girls say, let's just try this. And maybe if we can get popping on YouTube, more people will know about our plays. And then when we go to other cities, we can pop off. Because the other thing about the play that I didn't mention is you needed that money because you had to lure an A-list or a former A-list star. You know, like a lot of Black people, after they ain't big in movies, they do the play circuit or they're in between gigs. And we didn't have that money. So we're like, if we become big enough that we are the stars, then we can save that money. And the first two videos we did went viral. And I've basically been working in this space ever since. And that was January 2012.
Oh, yeah, man. That's an amazing journey to truly bet on yourself and be at that point where you feel like you're about to quit. You're going to go do something else. But, you know, that breakthrough, man, God is always, he's always on time. And he can't deliver for you. That's awesome.
For sure.
That's awesome. So I want to talk about, you know, you had your stepfather, you know, who raised you up and showed you, you know, how to be a man and how to raise your family, how to take care of your family. And now you've made it, you know, you're this famous guy that's everywhere. You know what I mean? Like, has your biological pops ever popped back up in any of this?
Oh yeah. He popped up well before this. We, are still working to mend, that relationship. By the grace of God, he popped up before this, because I feel like it'd be too difficult to have found me now and be like, man, you know what? That's my bad, brother. You know, I'd be like, nah, fam. So he popped up well before any of this. You know, I wouldn't say we have a strong relationship yet, but you know, he's apologized, I've forgiven him. It's just kind of difficult to build a relationship. You know, he lives in Alabama. So it's difficult, you know, as busy as I am, to like really build that relationship, because I'm grown, you know, now I got my own kids and a very busy schedule and things like that. So, but yeah, we talked. Yeah, we talked.
That's cool, man. I'm glad he hit you up before the fame, though, because he would have got that big rejection if he hits you up now. But what's his I mean, has he commented on kind of your successes, you know, at all?
Yeah, and to his credit, you know, he's always like, I'm very proud of you, I'm very happy for you, and I don't want to ever try and take credit for your success. You know, I don't want you to ever feel like I'm trying to come around because of your success. Like, obviously it's dope, but even if you weren't, you know, who you are, you'd still be my son and important to me and things like that. So those are all super dope things to hear, and, you know, very important for me to hear as well. So, you know, because there could still be the you wasn't shooting with me in the gym mentality.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. But to his credit, he plays that well. Plays that he allows the relationship to develop at the pace it's developing.
Nah, yeah. That's pretty cool. And I know your stepdad was around, but, you know, not having your biological father, at least for me, it feels like I didn't know half of who I was. With you guys kind of talking more, do you see like, oh, maybe I get this from him? Like, have you ever had any of those moments?
I definitely get this body type from him. Like, man, I went down to visit him a couple years back, and he had his back turned and he looked pretty fit. You know, and he turned around and I was like, oh my God,
that's me.
That's me. That's me in the corner. You know what I'm saying? Like, big belly, as tall as I am, a little taller than I am, you know what I'm saying? Around the same height. I'm like, okay, that's what 270 looks like, 290 maybe. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? And in the South, especially his family, Nobody cares if you're big. They're like, well, that boy right. big, or you got big kids, you could play defense, but no, we're not in the league. So we don't really need to be 290. You know what I'm saying? Like, there ain't no benefits for that, but it's not a big deal. Personality wise, I haven't got a whole bunch of that. Like, oh, I'm funny because of that. Cause my mom, hilarious. My grandma's funny. My brother, my sister. So I wouldn't attribute that. You know, he'd be like, nah, our side of the family's funny. You got it from us. And I'd be like, everybody wants to claim that part. But definitely my looks and my body type are for sure him. And apparently he was pretty athletic. So, we played all sports growing up. I mean, if there was a sport, we played it. I'm sure y'all were similar. We was hooping, football, baseball, soccer. You know what I'm saying? Racing. It wasn't the AAU where you play basketball and that's all you do. It was just like, whatever sports in season, that's what we playing, even if it's just in the neighborhood. So apparently he was really athletic. But, so that's, I got that mostly from him.
Now that makes sense, man. And so kind of pushing forward in your story, you know, you've had a lot of success, you know, and I think, people look at it and they're like, oh, Kev on stage, he's this big guy, but there's been a grind all around, you know, from way back when you was doing it in college. But what for you, what was your like, look, mama, I made it moment that you was like, you know what? I'm here now. I've arrived.
This is going to sound crazy. People always are very surprised at my answers to questions like these. I don't have that. I don't think I've made it.
Really?
Really? I don't. I think maybe it's because of what I know I want to do. And I tend to not rest on my laurels. And I'm not even saying that to flex. I just, you know, my wife, my therapist, they'd be like, bro, you should congratulate yourself, you know, but because I wanted to be in traditional media, there's not even been like a Deadline article or a Wikipedia page. You know what I'm saying? So I always dreamed of like a big movie premiere, box office, sunset. Like those are the things I'm looking for. And it's kind of silly now because I know I'm not even like, that ain't even the path I'm on as far as like, I'm not auditioning for traditional Hollywood movies. Like I'm making my own path, but because it's a new path, there's the accolades and the things they're not there yet. There's not not a Grammy. There's not an Oscar that holds the same relevance for this or an Emmy or something like that. There's stuff like the Streamies and all that, but it's like, if you won the first Oscar, you wouldn't be like, you'd be like, oh, this is dope, man. This is cool. Award. You know what I'm saying? Don't have the reverence yet. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So I think, but maybe if I said, well, this isn't mine, but for a lot of people getting the soundstage, people are like, dang, you really doing it. And for me, it wasn't like, it definitely wasn't a flex. It was like, man, if we get this space, we could do so much more. And it's also like a huge risk. And it's going to be a lot of money to go into it just to get it up and running. And then a large amount of money to maintain it and a long-term commitment. So it's more fear of like, dang, can we do this? What if X, Y, and Z happens? But one of the blessings was being able to thrive in the pandemic made me a little less fearful, because it was like, you know, before that, it's like, what's the worst that could happen? Like, what if I, for me, it was like, what if I get canceled and I can't make no money? Well, the pandemic canceled me for myself. It was like, we was on tour selling out, and then it was zero dates. And that's our number one income generator. And the fact that we figured out a way to adapt and survive, you know, come up with Keep Your Distance, even the app in the midst of a global pandemic, kind of made me be like, okay, well, if we can navigate this, then I can figure out a way to make this, you know, soundstage and this app pop.
No, that's what's up, man. And, you know, I totally get what you're saying as far as like, you know, you feel like you still, you know, got a ways to go on your journey, but, you know, F all them traditional awards, man, we want to give you your roses, you know, while you're here, and praise you for the things that you've done now, man, because it's amazing to just, you know, see the things that you're doing. But then also hear the story behind it as far as like, you had moments where you wanted to quit. A lot of people don't see those or hear those type of stories. They think that, you know, when you pop up on the TV, it's like you're an overnight sensation. But in the back of your mind, you're like, man, 5 years ago, I was about to quit this thing. You know,
bruh, I was about to quit. I've never had like a viral video that took me from this many followers to like, it has literally felt like it's been one by one by one, you know, like I'm over a million and over 2 million on Facebook. It is, but it's not like I've had viral videos that a lot of people have seen, but those didn't, I've never jumped 10, 20,000 followers in a day. It's just like 500, 300, maybe a week, you know, but that's not overnight, you know. I've been posting a video once a day, every day for 9 years now. Wow. Them first three, at least on Kev on Stage page, I'm talking about 47 views, 18. I remember when I was happy to break 100. Dang, in 1,000. Like, now the Playmakers, we had success relatively quickly, but that to me wasn't the same because it was a group and it was, you know, a Black church was a very relatable. Kev on Stage, I was like, I want to do my other stuff. I want to do what I think is funny. And that stuff took time, man. So, but I think the benefit of that is I spent that time and I worked and worked and worked and worked and worked. And I learned so much from the slow growth. I learned from the mistakes of others. And I'm talking about people blew past me. There's people who had less followers than me, blew past me, reached all the success, then flamed out and you know, and just and watching their mistakes and learning from them and things like that. So I honestly can say I wouldn't have it any other way. And the other thing about this industry is when you pop, man, and it pops, it's pop. Like when Tiffany Haddish, who had already been working and stand up for years and even on TV for years, but when she got Girls Trip, everybody knew who she was. And she ain't looked back. So I think what's more important for me is getting the character stuff right, marriage stuff right, my kids, like my kids are finally turning their back on me. You know, it's a joke me and Tony Baker saying, what it means is like they're growing up and they're not relying on me. But I'm glad that I didn't have huge success while they were in the developmental phases because I've been at their games, picked them up and took them to school for years, been a part of their life. So now my son's going in the 10th grade. Like if I pop now, it ain't like, oh, my dad was never a part. It's like, bro, my dad was there. We was watching Marvel stuff. We was watching all the movies, before the kid movies, Mickey Mouse Clubhouse was our jam. You know what I'm saying? Right. So there's all these pictures and videos and memories of us just being a family. And that's more important to me to have been there for that part than to pop and not have that relationship, you know what I'm saying, with them. Because now I know they know. Like now when I talk to them, I was talking to my son the other day, I come back from a longer trip for me. I had been to Mexico for my birthday for 4 days, came back for a day, and went to Atlanta for almost a week. And when I got home, I was like, did y'all miss me? And they were like, No, man. Right. They're like, bro, we just been chilling. But you know, man, kids, I don't know how old your kids are, James now, but bro, if they got their own room, phone.
They off, yeah. Dude,
bruh, Zoom school, my kids are self-contained. If the Wi-Fi's on, electricity on, there's food, they don't even be knowing when I'm leaving.
So true. So but daily, I have to call up and ask my son, like, are you alive up there? He's 11. He'd be in the Zoom in his own room. You got to check on him, make sure he good. Come down to eat, get some fresh air or something.
Yeah. So it makes me happy that they feel safe and they feel like we have a good relationship and they don't have to, you know, because I was growing up. I remember when I, like, anything at your boy's house was more fun than anything at your house. Yep. You know what I'm saying? Like, we over there playing GoldenEye. I have GoldenEye at home. It ain't fun. It ain't nearly as fun as your GoldenEye or GoldenEye together. You know what I'm saying? So I'm truly grateful for the path and the way it's happened. I wouldn't want it to be any other way.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, spot on, man. And I've watched people grow on social media, and you know, you're right. Like people can kind of have that like hockey stick moment where they explode. And then if you don't have anything after that, you come down and it's like a fall from grace. But for those who get it consistently, I think that's the better path you want to be on, because then that allows you that longevity throughout your career. And you're not like this flash in the pan thing that comes and then the next day you're gone. So,
and that's the difference between like fans and community and audience. Like I have people who have been supporting me since, you know, my children were 5 and 3, and they're turning 15 and 13 now. So they've been around for a long time. So they're buy the tickets, they'll buy the shirt, they'll come to the show. And if we get a movie, they'll support because they've seen the growth. Like, got a couple of viral videos. Now you're a fan of mine. You might only want to watch for the type of content you see. It's very rare that you have a reason to support outside of what you went viral for.
Yeah.
You know, so that's why to me, I'm more grateful that I didn't have this huge viral moment that made me, but I've built, you know, relationships with these people over years and lives on Periscope and Social Cam and all that, and the live shows and stuff. Like, we have deeper connections than just like flash in the pan success that's gonna be gone, you know, when the next thing. It's like Jay-Z versus, you know, Silento. Like, yep. Everybody was singing that song, right? But then the next summer, you're not thinking about that song, right? You know,
yep.
Jay-Z, bro, I remember I'm 38 now. I remember Hard Knock Life was all of our song, and I was like 16. We are 15 mm-hmm. in high school. So to see that development from that Jay-Z to 444, where I'm a husband and wife, I mean, husband, my wife, here's my mistakes I made. Like, that's a different connection than an artist that had a hot summer. Yeah. Party rock, party like a rock star. We was all doing that, you know, yep. But the next summer we wasn't doing that. And I'm not shading either of those artists. I'm just saying, like, Jay-Z don't have like a viral song, so to speak. He never had like an Old Town Road.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So, but those careers with the deeper relationships last longer because those connections are deeper.
Yeah, totally agree. And I think, you know, everybody, and Jay said this, I think, in an interview years ago where he talked about those white hot moments where like people get into entertainment and they want to live in that white hot space, but it's like, well, nah, like that space is, it's only there for a moment. You're not going to be white hot forever. So what are you going to do times before that and the times after that to make sure that you're still around, you're still relevant, you're
yeah.
still connected with your audience. So I think you're doing a great job with that. And I think for kind of like our next foray question was, because I know you haven't had that moment yet, but I've had moments as a fan where I feel like, well, damn, like, Kev done made it, man. And one of those moments for us was a couple of months ago when you did the Dads Just Don't Understand with Will Smith. Like, I can't tell you how excited I was when I saw that. Like, yo, this is crazy. Like, to watch yeah. where it came from. And Will, for a long time, Will Smith was my favorite actor. Like, he was the superhero guy of the summer. So
yeah.
To see that, I thought that was dope. And I thought that was like that moment where it was like, oh man, he's here, he's arrived, he's on his way. So talk to us about that. Like, How did you guys come up with that idea for that show? And what was the inspiration behind it for you and Will to kind of link up and pull that off?
So Will's company, Westbrook Media, had the deal with Facebook Watch, was making a We the Culture program, which was like, for creators of my level, it's like, hey, we're going to fund some content for you to create something you might not have had the resources to before. And for his companies of his level, it was like, yo, we want to fund some content where you can highlight an up and coming creator. His team came up with the concept. Homegirl of mine, a Black woman, Key Williams, was the live and connection. How I even ever started working with Will. Big shout out to Black women. And they had reached out to me. I had been doing some producing with Will for his Snapchat show. And they had reached back out to like, hey, can you write for another one? And I was like, I couldn't, because the first one, it was at the beginning of the pandemic and I had nothing but time. You know what I'm saying? Mm. But the second time it came around, the world was opening more and I had Keep Your Distance. I was working on the app stuff. And for those type of shows, you kind of got to be available like that, like, you know, a lot of meetings and stuff like that, which is good. And I was just like, yo, I would love to, but I can't commit to that schedule because I got other stuff, podcasts, like basically everything I was doing was back. So a couple of weeks later, they hit me back like, yo, would you be interested in like hosting this type of like show, which is kind of like based off what you do. Like, I review videos on the internet every day, all day. I'm also a dad. Everybody knows who's followed me for a while, I always, you know, well, when my kids were young, we made videos all the time. Now we make some videos together, but not as much because they're cool now. But I really still didn't believe it was real until I saw it posted, you know, on his Instagram. Because it's like, Will is, I felt the same way as you, James. Like, he is as the most bona fide star that majority of his career path happened during my life, yeah. Right? I remember Independence Day.
Yeah.
Right? I was like, yo. Because remember, he's not even the star like that. Like, you got Jeff Goldblum. Like, he's a star, but it ain't like Will Smith only. Mm-hmm. Like his I Am Legend level is. But Bad Boys, remember the first Bad Boys, Martin got
top. Martin was a star, yeah.
Yeah. So, but in the Enemy of the State, and I'm like, okay, you know, but by Men in Black, by that level, it's like, okay, I mean, Tommy Lee Jones, you in it too. You know what I'm saying? But we coming for Will. So in my mind, the only way I work with Will is if I am in traditional Hollywood. And I can only really liken it to what it must feel like. Like, LeBron been in the league 16 years, 17 years?
17, 18.
Like, you could have been, like, there's a picture of him and Jason Tatum when Jason Tatum is like 12.
Yeah.
Right. So there's got to be like, you see LeBron and he's browning already and you're 12. 8 years later, you're balling against LeBron. And it's like, I always think like, you got to have a moment like, oh my God, I'm on the floor with LeBron James.
Yeah.
But you have to get that out of your head because he will try and dunk on you.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, and that's what Hollywood, like, that's what this career is like, is like, idolizing these people or being so impressed with them, infatuated with them, all that stuff. But at the end of the day, when them cameras come on, I gotta show why I'm here. You know what I'm saying? And yeah, I think I have a skill set that's got me where I am. You know, Will's skill set got him where he was too. And he's one of the few stars that was able to transition that into social media, yeah. that was fully on famous prior. Like Kevin Hart was a star on social media, and then boom. The Rock too was more like Will Smith, but he always kind of had social media. But that's like, Will Smith is like Denzel Washington getting on social media, like legitimately a movie star, and the mysterious kind where you know about them when you need to, but you don't know about their day-to-day life. So then being able to be in a project with him or with his company was like crazy. And the amount of like love I got from that was like amazing, bro. Like, it was so dope. And the crazy thing about this, and I still don't believe people when they say this, but they say it. I've heard it a lot. They're like, man, meeting you, and they see people on my shows and stuff. They're like, bro, meeting you is like you meeting Will Smith. Like, that's how happy I was when I met you. And I'd be like, man, ain't no way. I'm just Kev. But if you think about it, man, I always tell people this, right? If you like Denzel Washington, he's your favorite actor, and you've seen every movie he made. You see him for 2 hours once, maybe twice a year. And say you watch all of his press for the entire run, which is unlikely. It was what, late night things, magazine, maybe 10 hours of that whole thing. And that's being generous. If you're a true Kev on Stage fan, man, I do an hour and a half podcast 3 times a week. Like, you see me that much on just those shows. You follow me on Instagram, social media. You know where I'm on vacation, how my kids are doing. My son's good at soccer. You know, my wife is this. We moved, like, all of that stuff. Then you get to see me live. So that connection is deeper than a traditional star where you see them 4 or 5 hours, once a year, twice a year. Like, if you're a huge Kev on Stage fan, like my Patreon people, bro, they be in the lives 2 and 3 hours twice a week. Every week, you know what I'm saying? So it just feels, you feel more connected as a result, because with me and my, you know, community, there's no publicist creating the narrative or creating the image, for better or for worse. It really is me, you know. So people meet me, they'd be like, I feel like I know you, like you really do a lot of me, you know. It's the performative part of my personality, but you know, it's a lot of my thoughts and stuff are, you know, I share those. So that's usually, that's how I feel, for real.
Nah, that's dope. And it's just, again, salute to you for being able to build that community and doing it organically, right? Because you're just being yourself. And even to kind of touch on, you know, what you said, it's like, you know, people feel like they know you, right? But we want to dive a little bit deeper with you on what we came here to talk about, which is fatherhood. So, you know, people see all the videos, not as many because your kids, like you said, are cool now. But who are you as a dad, you know, day to day, Kev?
I'm an amazing father. I say that. I am an amazing father because fatherhood is something I always wanted. Like how the world trains girls to be mothers and prepare for motherhood. I wouldn't say I was trained, but I always wanted kids. Always wanted two boys for as long as I could remember. And I made sure to connect with my boys continually. Like I know what it feels like to not have your parents be able to spend actual time with you. Like I was telling my son, my dad, and this is not a, you know, indignation of him. It's just, he was working or whatever. He played video games with me one time in my childhood. Joe Montana football. I beat the brakes off him and he never sat down with me again. Me and my wife play, you know, Spelunky with my son all the time. Mario Brothers all the time. We watched every episode of WandaVision together, every episode of Falcon and Winter Soldier. We've watched every Marvel movie together, even the ones that came out before they were little, before they were into it. We went back and watched those. We watched every Star Wars movie together. All, you know what I'm saying? We wrestle at home all the time. I jump on the trampoline with them. We have the for real heart to hearts. You know what I'm saying? I take my son to soccer practice. We go to his soccer games. You know, take my older son to robotics tournaments. Like, if nothing else, I'm super, super present in their life. My wife as well. But this is about me and my amazingness. My kids be like, nah, man, you, and I be checking in with them. Do you feel like, you know, like really loving them in a way that they, that feels like love, like with their love language and stuff like that. So, but it's because I know the value that my dad's relationship with me had on my life and how I see the world. I want to make sure to instill that same level, if not more, with my son. So, you know, we share memes, YouTube videos. I know what they're watching on, not everything. Like I know they be watching cussing when I ain't around, but I know what creators they like, their sense of humor based on their YouTube history, you know, what apps they like. You know, I'm tapped in with my sons. You know, their friends come over to the house. I know their friends' names, who does what, who's good, who's bad now, who we ain't rocking with no more. My son's favorite Starbucks drink went from double chocolate chip frappuccino for the last 5 years to the last week or two, it's now a pink drink. I'm on that. Like, I know, you know what I'm saying? Like, I'm tapped in with my sons, you know, and I enjoy it. I think they enjoy it as well. They can't appreciate it because they only know great parents and they don't have, you know, by the grace of God, their generation and their like circle of friends and cousins, especially on the black side, like our, my brother, he's in his son's life. You know what I'm saying? Like they see like my homegirls and things like that. They see active parents. You know what I'm saying? So it's dope to know that like they've had a good example as a dad. And that came from my dad being a good example for me.
Yeah, that's dope. And even if they can't like recognize that, you know, they have two awesome, amazing parents who are really plugged in with them, to your point, like when they get older, when they become parents, they're going to already know what to do because it's been ingrained in them. It's been instilled in them and they witnessed it growing up. So I think it's amazing that, you know, you guys have done that. And for you to be as plugged in as you are, man, because you're a busy guy. So to be as busy as you are and to still be plugged in, like a lot of times back in the day, what our parents and even their parents, it was like, oh, I got to work. I'm busy. I got to do this to the family. And they thought that just putting food on the table was enough. But like what I've learned as a parent, and I'm sure you've learned this, and Jesse is going to know this just because he gets to talk to all of us who have kids all the time, is that's not enough anymore, man. These kids need more. You know what I mean? They want to know. Like you're a part of it. Like my son wants me to come play Fortnite. I can't stand Fortnite, but I play it because he won't play it. You know what I'm saying?
And that's like the crazy thing. Like that's why I'm into soccer. I wanted my sons to play basketball, right? Because that's what I played. They didn't want to, right? So I could have forced them into my thing, or what I did with my older son was like, I'm out. And I'm like, all right, he's into movies. So we have a relationship based off movies and things that like that, which I also like. My youngest son is into soccer. So I learned the doggone game. I learned offside, cross, corner, you know what I'm saying? Striker, step over the players, how the game works, bought soccer jerseys, you know what I'm saying? Figured out that stuff because I've learned that being interested in what they're interested in is more impactful than trying to bring them over to what you're interested in. You know what I'm saying? So, but it takes that work for sure.
Yeah, that makes sense, man. So when you think about, you know, the relationship between you and your wife, and we follow your wife, Melissa, too, big fan of just the entire family. Actually, my wife is an influencer, so her and your wife are connected. They chop it up, too. So,
oh, no.
Yeah, because we just linked y'all with our photographer out there in L.A. We just moved from L.A. not too long ago. But when you think about y'all and the difference, because it sounds like you might be the fun parent. I'm not sure. I don't know what Absolutely. Melissa would say about that.
You're 1,000% correct.
But who's the disciplinarian in the household?
My wife. I'm not proud of it. It's not the right way, but we fell into a good cop, bad cop dynamic. I do discipline my sons as well, but I'm not, that's not my role as much. And she allows me that. But, you know, I'm not in a situation where I force them to her when it's trouble time. Like, you know what I'm saying? But because she tends to be home with them more, especially when I'm on the road, that she falls in it. But it's also like she wants better for them, and she wants it. Let's get it right. Let's get it tight. You know what I'm saying? I ain't going to hold you. I'd be like, come on, man. I'd be like, man, do this so mommy don't get us in trouble.
I'm with you on that. I'm the fun parent, and probably I discipline when necessary, but I also have a daughter too. So I have three kids. So when my daughter came, like the discipline stuff kind of just went out the window. So it's kind of tough now where you never discipline her. So you can't tell the boys, you can tell them something, but you can't be all hard on them if you ain't doing it to the girl too. So
right.
I get it.
Yeah.
And even, man, just thinking about like the age you guys as kids are growing up. And I know when I was growing up, man, I grew up around the time, I think I was a senior in high school when I finally got a Facebook. So I didn't like, as a kid, you know, we didn't grow up with like social media, but kids these days, they growing up, it's Instagram, Snapchat, you know, all these different apps. And you being a father who also uses social, you know, to your advantage, how do you teach your kids not to, you know, put all of their, you know, value in social media likes and things of that nature? How do you teach them the balance of those type of things?
I think for me, luckily, my sons are not into it nearly as much as I am, or even other kids are. My younger son only watches YouTube. He don't have no other social media. He don't post nothing except our podcast. My older son is similar. Like, he might use Snapchat here and there, but not nearly as much. And I kind of let him know the internet's, you know, the downfalls of it and stuff like that. But it's as much of their part of their life as TV was for us. You know what I'm saying? So we have conversations and things like that. But about, you know, my dad told me this. He was like, man, whatever you post on the internet, it's there forever. It can't be deleted. The moment it's posted, it's out there. So I kind of lead them with that reminder of being careful of what you do and how it can be dangerous, and, you know, how social media is an example of the best parts of people's life. It's never an accurate reflection of anybody's life. It's a highlight reel of their life. It ain't, you know, if you had a 50-point game, you went, you know, 18 for 36. They don't show your 16, 18 misses in the highlight. You know what I'm saying? They show you cooking on that 18 and then free throws and stuff like that. So I kind of like use that as an example of like, you know, it's real, but it's not. And I think because of who I am and them being able to see that, they are more aware of it than maybe another kid would be.
That's amazing, man. There's so much that happens on social nowadays. So to know that your kids are still grounded and they're not really moved by that, I think what you guys are instilling in them is pretty awesome. And that'll take them as they get older and they get off on their own, go to college and things like that. They'll know, you know, like, you know, this is what I should and shouldn't be doing. And they're kids. We all make mistakes as kids. But yep. At least they have that foundation to fall back on so they can kind of recognize, like, all right, I shouldn't go down this path because don't hit send is what I tell the kids. Like, I mean, just think about it before you hit send.
Right.
So kind of pushing forward a little bit more, man. We know your kids are in the teenage years now, but, you know, at Dear Fathers, we have this segment. It's called Dads in Delivery, where we really like to get into the mental state that you were in, you know, when you found out you were having a kid, because a lot of times, like, we don't get to talk about that as fathers. It's usually always, you know, how the woman felt and what she's mm-hmm. going through. But take us back to that moment you found out you were becoming a dad. Like, what were you feeling physically and emotionally?
Man, when my wife got that first positive pregnancy test, I was ecstatic. She took about 8 more, though. Two $30 ones and like six dollar store ones. And the dollar store ones said the same thing. They was like, you can do this all day long. They all gonna come back positive. I remember I was ecstatic, man. I was like, yes, I'm gonna have a kid. I'm gonna be able to play with them, hold them, all this, you know, stuff. In some ways, I still look at my kids and they look to me like they did when they were a year old, you know, 2 years old in the face, you know. I was ecstatic when she announced she was pregnant. I was ecstatic throughout the pregnancy process. I was ecstatic upon their birth, both of their births. I was there in the delivery room for my second son. My wife, on our first son's birth, she had some complications, so she had an emergency C-section, and I wasn't allowed to be there. But when they brought the baby back, I was right there. She was kind of like, basically out of it for 5 days, the first 5 days of his life, just like sleeping, recovering. So it was just me and him. You know what I'm saying? Like I remember very clearly, she went under the knife, the anesthesia, pregnant, woke up to having a baby. She looked at him, I'm holding him. She's like, is he cute? And I'm like, mm-hmm. And then she basically faded in and out for the next 5 days. Mm. So that wasn't ideal. Like, not ideal. That wasn't what I thought would happen. You know, in the movies and your other friends, the woman is awake and coherent. She's holding the baby, you know, hair messed up or whatever, and you guys are taking turns. I was like, oh, it's just me. You know what I'm saying? For the first 5 nights, you know. And it was, but I was welcome. I welcomed the challenge. It was great. Cause he was my son too. Like, I wasn't like, you know, gonna just hold him and be like, we were just talking about this, telling a friend, she was asking like, who changed the more diapers? And me and my wife agreed, like we split the wake ups in the middle of the night. We split the drop offs and pickups. We split the diapers and cleanup. Like I was there doing my part. You know what I'm saying? Like it was my joy to do. It was my responsibility and my duty. So it was great, man. I was in a great space the entire time, man. Obviously I was afraid because I wasn't making that much money. We weren't making that much money as a family, and kids are obviously very expensive. Mm-hmm. And I didn't really even realize how expensive. Like, we had one son, daycare was more expensive than our rent at our apartment. And mm-hmm. when by the time we had both sons, daycare was more expensive than our mortgage by like a lot. Like, our mortgage was like $1,100 and daycare was $1,600-1,700. It's like, bruh, y'all out here really, y'all making more than the bank man. And the bank man makes money. You know what I'm saying? So, yeah, man, I was in a great place.
That's what's up, man. We always like to hear those stories because like James said, man, you normally just hear from the mothers in that aspect. So thanks for your transparency and kind of letting us know how you felt in that moment. And just thinking about everything we talked about, man, you dropped a lot of gems. You kind of told us about the ups and downs to the beginning of your career in the entertainment industry. But as a father, man, have you had any moments where you felt like, man, like this is just tough, or like any moments where you just felt like you struggled, and how did you overcome, you know, those struggles in that fatherhood journey?
Yeah, man, I feel like parenthood is tough because the landscape's ever changing. You know, your kids are changing, the world is changing. I don't know that I had a moment of exasperation where I felt like giving up, but I remember one time my oldest son, he threw up. He was sick and he threw up in this car seat. And I remember I pulled over and I mean, there was throw up everywhere, man, in the car seat, in the nooks and crannies. And I remember being like, mommy, like, I need help. I can't do this by myself. This is like one small example of like, man, you tripping, bro. But I feel like for the most part, because I had an amazing wife, I always had somebody to share the burden with. So I think if I were a single father, I could imagine feeling more of those moments because I would have had to carry more of that burden. But because they have an amazing mom, I've never felt too overwhelmed. You know what I'm saying? Like she gets her buckets too, so to speak.
Yeah, that's amazing, man. Having a partner, you know, definitely makes life a lot easier. I couldn't imagine having my three and doing it by myself, man. Commend those dads who do it, man. But it's
salute, bro.
That's tough. So another segment we do here at Dear Fathers, man, and I think this one is gonna be really dope coming from you, is we love to give dads a chance to, you know, write a hypothetical letter to their pops. So in your situation, if you could write a letter to your father, starting with Dear Fathers, what would you say? Dear Father, what would you say?
I'd write it to my stepfather and I'd say, Dear Father, thank you. Thank you for being an example. Thank you for showing me what unconditional love was. Thank you for your sacrifice. Thank you for your vision, your prayer, your love, your, you know, hugs, kisses, your, you know, support, your wisdom. Without you, I don't become the father I am. My sons don't become the men they're destined to be. And for that, I say thank you.
Oh, that's dope, man. We definitely appreciate that. And, you know, I hope your step pops, he hears this and kind of hears that. I'm pretty sure you probably tell him all the time how much you appreciate him. But I hope he hears this and kind of just, you know, understands that, you know, you acknowledge the role that he played in your life. And even, you know, with your biological father, man, hoping y'all continue to grow, whatever that looks like. Don't got to be all, you know, buddy, buddy, but, you know, hope y'all continue to grow.
Yeah.
As well, man. So we definitely appreciate you for, you know, opening up and being transparent about that too.
Of course, man. Thank you guys so much.
For sure, man. And just kind of getting us to the place of wrapping up, you know, we definitely wanted to give you a chance to, one, tell the folks how they can follow you across social. And then we want to know what's next for Kev.
Yeah, you can follow me everywhere on Kev on Stage, except TikTok is Kev on Stage TikTok. I don't know why somebody stole my name on TikTok. I promise you, I don't think I'm going to be able to do much with it. That's for the children. But the most important thing I'm working on right now is the Kev on Stage Studios app, which is available in the App Store, wherever you know have it, Apple, Android, Google Play, Roku, Amazon, all that stuff. It's a place where Black people are creating content with Black people in mind as the recipients of that content. Although trauma stories are important, we are tending to focus on digital Black joy. If you do watch a Black movie that's tough, our hope is that when you're done, you can come to the Kev on Stage Studios app and grab a laugh. And you're supporting other Black creators by having our support. And I'm also on tour coming to cities near you. So just visit kevonstage.com for those ticket dates. Black people, I am selling these tickets. They are being sold. Don't hit me. Atlanta just sold out today. I've been telling people for a week that it's this many tickets, this many. When it sold out, people are like, man, add more. Ain't no more dates. Ain't no more. Y'all had plenty of time. So please, please, please come see me safely, you know what I'm saying, and we'll have a good time.
That's what's up, man. We definitely going to tap into the things you got going on. I want to know how we can, you know, maybe potentially get more involved in the studios, man. I feel like we got a lot of stories here that symbolize Black joy, man. So we'd love to, you know, collab or, you know, do something. I don't know how we get involved in being a part of that, but I think just what we do overall here at Dear Fathers, promoting Black culture, telling stories of Black fatherhood, and while some of them do talk about trauma and, you know, think struggles, a lot of the stories are, you know, stories like yourself, you know, great memories growing up and also men being great fathers. So we'd love to be able to share some of that on the app if possible. So yeah, just let us know if we can potentially
absolutely, man. Let's talk about it.
Okay. All right, for sure, man. And I guess before we get out of here, man, I wanted to ask you this, man, because we all hoop. Me and James hoop. You play ball too. Who you got winning the championship this year?
So I am a firm believer that until you beat LeBron James, you have to go through LeBron.
Yeah.
My fear this year is the Lakers are last time they were a well-oiled machine by the time the playoffs came. This time they are not yet, you know, because of AD's injury and then LeBron's injury and then LeBron's I guess he came back too early. They ain't rocking. I think Chris Paul looked pissed. They might have the right combination of young people who don't care, who ready to let it fly, and veteran leadership. So if it ain't the Lakers, my money is on the Suns, man. I know the Nets got the firepower, but sometimes it's a matchup and just, you know, it's just tough. So that's how I would probably say the Lakers, Suns, and then the Nets.
Okay, man. Chris Paul been looking pissed for the last 10 years, man. So
it really
I ain't gonna believe it until I see it, man. So I'm going with the Lakers versus the Nets in the finals, man. We gone.
There we go.
See you though. What you got, James?
Oh, you know I'm Lakers Nets, but I'm pulling for Bron. So you know,
always
see what happens with that one.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Kev on stage, and listen, you're rocking with the Dear Fathers podcast. Make sure to download that where podcasts be.
Thank y'all for listening to another impactful conversation on the Dear Fathers podcast. It's your host, James Meeks.
And your co-host, Jesse Alex. But before we get out of here, make sure you subscribe anywhere you get your podcast, and we'll catch y'all next time. Salute.
My own CD cover. I'm so focused as Steven Glover. Still up and coming, but for sure coming. Went out on a limb like I broke something. Watch how he recover.